You're probably wondering, what just happened? If you don't follow The Flash, or you never read the comic books, or you've never tuned in before, then you're mighty confused at what you just saw. So let me just kind of help you understand. Barry Allen is The Flash, and he is running back and forth to save his city from a villain-induced tidal wave. How comic book is that, right? So back and forth he runs because he is trying to create a wall of wind. Faster and faster he runs. He's pushing his abilities beyond what he had ever done before, pushing and running, back and forth he goes. You saw the lightning strike. Keep getting faster and faster as his fiance watched on. And back and forth he goes, and he's trying so desperately to run faster and faster and faster. And he runs so fast that he literally rips a hole in time, and he runs through it. And when he stops running, not only does he find himself in downtown Central City, he finds himself in the day before the tidal wave ever hit. How cool of a power is that? Would that not be an awesome power to have if you could rip a hole in time and just run back and fix things that went wrong before they ever happened? That would be totally cool, wouldn't it? I mean, I can think of at least a bazillion things I'd like to go change in my own life, things that I could go back and fix. I remember in the 90s they came out with this television show called Quantum Leap, and it was all about a guy that could leap from place to place in his own life, putting back that which went wrong. I'd love to have this power. There's only one small problem. You see, every time Barry Allen used this power to rip a hole in time and go back in time to fix something that he felt just was wrong, when he returned to the present, he found out there were some unintended consequences to fixing that problem. He went back in time and saved his mother from ever dying, but when he came back, he found out that that actually killed his best friend's mother. He went back in time to free his father from prison, but when he came forward in time, he realized he was even no longer the Flash. So eventually, he had to stop. This had to be one of those powers that became off limits, that was the great temptation. Don't do this, because while you might fix some things, you're going to break other things as you do this. So maybe time travel isn't such a good power to have. Maybe in the ability to fix my life, I would wreck somebody else's. But this brings us to our struggle with time. Now, before you're thinking, man, you're just hitting on all cylinders here, Barry. I mean, it's one thing to have a Mother's Day sermon and an Easter sermon and a Christmas sermon series and a Father's Day sermon and manage to get all of those stake poles put in and get sermon series, but this is a time change weekend, and guess what we're talking about this week? Time. So before you give me too much credit, just so you know, somebody sent me an email a couple weeks ago and said, it's Time Change Sunday, don't forget to announce it. I had no idea when Time Change Sunday was. So we will give the idea that the time sermon arrives on Time Change Sunday. We'll just give that one to God, because I had no clue when it was, because they have to tell me when to turn my clocks up around here. I will forget. But we struggle with time. We do. It's our most precious resources, because honestly, we really don't know how much we have, do we? This might be the very last sermon I ever preach, or, you know, I'm 52, so that's, let's just call it 10 years, so that's 52 sermons, or there might be another 520. I don't know how many more sermons I'll preach just based off of time. So since it's so precious, we try very hard to use it wisely. We even try to save it, and I never understood this concept. There is no saving time, because saving means that I put it aside for another day, and it doesn't work that way. That's not how time works. But we try real hard to save it. Sometimes we try to redeem it. We try to buy it back. And often, sometimes, what do we simply do with our time? We waste it. We do. In a mad effort to make the best use of our time, we look a lot like Barry Allen, running back and forth between our problems, trying to create some barrier so that we can live our life to the fullest. And that gets tiring, doesn't it? I mean, back and forth he went, just kept going and going and going. You know what he forgot, though? He forgot the lesson from last week. He can't run forever. Eventually, he would have ran out of steam, and then what would have happened to the wave? Well, hopefully, maybe the other guy that was making the wave ran out of energy, too. You see, this is the folly in how we treat our time. So, lesson four, as we finish up our flash series this week, we're going to talk about slowing down and living in God time. Now, when I use that word God time, you're probably thinking, okay, I know a lot of times. I know Eastern Standard Time, and there's Central Time, and there's Mountain Time, and then there's Greenwich Mean Time, and there's a lot of time. When I say God time, how do I set my clock to that? Well, there's some things that you need to understand. First thing you need to know is the origin of time. Did you know God created time? I mean, in Genesis 1:1, all the way back at the beginning, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, we'll be looking at God the Creator when we kind of flip our schedule around and then we stop talking about being still and we start talking about, and know that I'm God. So we're going to talk about God Creator later this year. But here's the thing. When God spoke that first word in Genesis 1:1, do you know what was out there before that? Nothing. A vast void of nothing. And I can't wrap my brain around there being nothing. That's one of the struggles that we have with this, is how can there be absolutely, positively nothing? But it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So all of the things that we attribute to time weren't there, and God just spoke, and I don't know what it looked like. I don't know the process that he used, but it just says that there was nothing until God says, let there be something. And well, not only is he the origin of time, God actually put in place our time measurements. Listen to Genesis chapter 1, verses 14 through 15. And God said, let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years, and let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light to the earth. And so it was. So keep this in mind just a second. Long before Galileo looked through his little telescope and saw, oh, round planets, long before we figured out human-wise that the sun doesn't go around the earth, that the earth goes around, long before science ever figured it out, here's scripture telling you. Let me tell you how this works. A rotation of the earth, that happens every 24 hours, except for this Sunday. It was 23 hours, but it was still 20. Anyway, that's a clock thing. But a rotation takes us 24 hours, and that makes up a day. For the earth to go all the way around the sun takes 365 days. That makes up a year. So the very things that we use to measure our time, God put in place. And these things now govern the seasons of our life, both figuratively and literally. They kind of let us know how long we've been here, and maybe even give us an expectation of how much longer we think we'll be here. All by these things that God put in place. He put them out there. And then comes the hard part. Because God was the origin of time, and then he put the things in place to measure time. And then he said, but I'm going to limit your time. This is what it says in Genesis chapter 3, verse 22. And the Lord God said, the man has now become like one of us, knowing good and evil. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and live forever. I've said it before, and I will continue to say it. The idea of immortality, the idea of physical death, of mortality, the idea of physical death was not a direct result of the punishment for sin. It wasn't part of the curse. It was a result because in our state, in our fallen state, God looked at us and said, you know what? If you have the ability to live forever and physical death is never one of those things you have to consider, then you know what? You'll never consider God. Your eternity will just be about living life to how you want it to be, and you'll never consider God. But think about it. This idea of mortality, this idea that there is no magic fruit that I can stretch my hand out and pull it off. I mean, apple a day keeps the doctor away, but it doesn't keep the casket away eventually. There is no moment that I can pick a fruit and say, if I eat this, I'm going to live forever. It's not the way it works. And God knew it. God knew that we would be content to live in our sin forever unless time has a limit. And that means you're not assured of tomorrow. So that means I have to think about my mortality. And here's the funny thing. The older you get, the more you think about it. That's just the way it works. You start watching those years go by, and you start looking, and you're like, oh my gosh, I am getting old. Maybe I should think about whether I plan my funeral or not. Maybe I don't want them to do it. We start thinking about things like this, and it's because we have an expiration date. And God is the one that put it in place. And that bothers me in one way, but in another way, it actually brings me a little bit of hope. Now, here's the other thing that we need to know when it comes to time. God does not view time the way we view time. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 says, "But do not forget this one thing, dear friends, with the Lord, a day is like a thousand years, and a thousand years are like a day." Now, I've heard this scripture used a lot of times in the incorrect way to try to talk about evolution. That's not the lesson we want to have here, okay? But what I do want you to see is that God is not confined to 24-hour days. I don't get it. My brain doesn't wrap that way. I mean, I just don't. God is not confined to 365 days a year. God is not even confined to living in one moment at one time. God kind of sees time happening all together, and I don't get it. Time travel shows give me a headache. This really gives me a headache because I don't understand how God views time. But you do understand that it's different for him. Isaiah echoes this. "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts are higher than your thoughts." Now, this is important for us to remember because a lot of times my struggle with time is because I'm looking in a box. I'm looking at the things that I wanted to get accomplished in an hour, maybe a day, maybe a year. Maybe you're a long-term planner and you've got like a 10-year plan for your life. I had one of those at one time. And you know what I decided? It never worked out the way I thought. I can go back and look at my little thing, you know, when you're a graduating senior and you had that thing, where will you be in 10 years? And you're supposed to write down where you're supposed to be in 10 years. Just so you know, right now I'm supposed to be in Pennsylvania somewhere, okay? The plan just didn't work out the way that I thought it was supposed to work out. But God, he says, you know what? I don't see things in a box. I see the big picture. All at once, not the little individual pieces that I'm trying to put together to make a life. And here's the other thing. If you really want your mind to be blown, time does not change God. Exodus chapter 3, verses 14 through 15. God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation." When Moses lived, God said, okay, they're going to ask me, who sent you? Who sent me? So tell me your name. And he says, "I am" is the way we translate it. You know what the term literally means? I exist. That's me. When they say what God sent you, you just say the God that exists, the one that has existed the same all the way back to the beginning and the one that will exist the same all the way forward. I exist. That's all you need to tell them. Really? Yeah. And of course, we understand that God doesn't change through time because we are all familiar with this verse. We love to quote this, right? When we're having one of those desperate moments and we're like, why, God? We love this verse. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 8. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I say that so easily. Do I live it so easily? I struggle with time. I struggle with this notion. Because you know what? While God is unchanged by time, I am not. This is the 10th year I have been at this church. And in some of the areas, I have matured. And in other areas, I've just gotten old. Okay? In some of the things that I do, I am a more mature person. They call that mellowing, I think. But in other areas, I've just gotten old. I don't do things as well as I used to because I'm old. You get this? I was in my 40s when I got here. Now I'm in 50s, and I'm pushing toward that big 60 mark, and I'm old. It's just what happens. I've gone from a season of kids in elementary school when I got here to now I have a college student and a high school student. All of those elementary days are gone. The days before that of getting up in the middle of the night to give them baby bottles are gone. There are no diapers left in my house. By the way, that's not a bad thing. There are no moments, you know, my life has changed. They've changed because time impacts my kids. My family has gotten older. My title and responsibilities from my secular job, it's not the same. 10 years ago when I walked in this building, in my secular job, most of my responsibilities would involve staring at a screen all day long and trying to find missing commas and semicolons as we were writing code. Most of my days nowadays are spent on the phone with a headset trying to find common sense amongst people that want more than they can possibly afford to pay for. That's just how my life has changed. Even my beliefs, things that I have once argued, I have now come to realize they're not as black and white as I thought they were. Things that I would have stood up in the middle of the floor and had knockdown, drag out fights with you about, this is how it has to be for God to work. I've mellowed, I guess. My family's thinking, you got a ways to go because you're not a very mellow person. But I've mellowed because there are just some things I'm hiding. That's not what we're fighting over anymore. What good does it do if I even win the argument? You see, that's how time works. Time changes absolutely everything and everyone except God. For those of you here today and you have little kids, wait 5 years. Because then they'll start being bigger than you. Okay? Wait 10 years, and you're starting to pack them up to head them off to college. Wait 20 years, and now talking about grandkids, and they're going to have little ones. And by the way, when they have grandkids, you get so much smarter. Okay? Because then you get to look at them and say, yeah, I told you this is the way it worked. Your day is coming. Okay? But just so you know, time changes everyone and everything except God. Now I have a problem. Because how does a being wrapped in time, that's me, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, 306, however you want to label your, how does a being like me that is totally wrapped and sometimes obsessed with time relate to a being that is timeless? God. He has no clock. He has no calendar. He has no to-do list that he has to get accomplished in a given amount of time. He could just speak and he could have more time. How do I relate to that? Anybody else here struggle with that? Because I do. How do I possibly relate with a being like that? Let's forget the fact that he's holy and he's perfect. He just doesn't have time. Okay, this sounds funny. He doesn't have time. Literally. He's got all the time he needs because he doesn't have time. My brain doesn't wrap that way. I don't know about yours. But here's what I do know. If I'm ever going to get to that point, I can't spend my days just running back and forth trying to create a wall of wind. Okay? I can't just try to make life work. I can't try to always be the person that's trying to save the world from itself. By just running back and forth, getting faster and faster and faster, cramming more in my calendar, trying to prove to God I can use my time more efficiently. Let me tell you what that gets you. Exhausted. tired, frustrated, angry. By the way, it has the same impact on your family because they get tired of watching you try to run that same race. That's what it gets you, trying to live your life that way. But there is a better way, and again, I am now preaching a sermon that I probably need to learn as much as I say this morning, because this morning we're going to talk about living in God time. Now, again, you're probably thinking, okay, how do I live in God time when God has no time? That's the point. We have to learn how to live our life in God time. And to do that, I'm going to give you three simple steps, three easy steps. Okay, I call them easy. They're easy to fill in the blank. They're easy to read. Living them, I'll let you know when it becomes easy, because it's not for me right now. And the very first thing that I have to do, if I'm going to live in God time, I have to have an eternal perspective. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. Now, the first thing that leaps off that verse to me is the fact that, you know, when I'm struggling with my Christian life, you know where I always seem to struggle the most? When I'm having my debate in the world, you know what everybody always wants to talk about? How did it start, and how is it going to end? And that's the debates we like to have. We want to talk about, well, exactly how did God create it? And by the way, while you're at it, can you please tell me exactly, can you explain this book of Revelation to me? Explain to me exactly how it's going to end. And here's the thing. Solomon tells us, you can try to explain it all you want, but you don't get it. Okay? You're never going to get it. It is an endless, tiring debate. And you know what? It works the same way with my Christian life. My Christian faith, what do I usually want to debate? When did it start? And how is it going to end? And that debate we like to have. What are the steps, the processes, the check boxes that I have to click to call myself a Christian? And then once I click all the check boxes, how long am I a Christian? Isn't that the debates we like to have? Solomon tells us it's just an endless debate. You can't win it. You're going to just run back and forth and tire yourself out trying to win this debate. And so Solomon says, I got a better lesson for you here. You see, we as people, there is an inner battle with us between making life comfortable and making our eternity profitable. Think about it. God, I really want to reach those people for Christ, but can you not set them in my seat when they come here? Lord, I really want to reach those people for Christ, but can you make them a little bit more like me before they come in the building? Lord, I really, really want to lead people to Christ, but do I really have to go out and talk to people to lead people? We want it comfortable, don't we? We want our seat and our spot and our time. And so there is this battle always going on to, I want to think about eternity because God said he put it in my heart to always be thinking about eternity, but I want to make eternity comfortable. And Solomon spent his entire life trying to make it comfortable in the here and now. Man, this guy, he tried the women, he tried the alcohol, he tried the career. I don't know what drugs they had back there, but he probably tried those too. This is a man that says he tried everything under the sun. His words, not mine, to make his life comfortable in the here and now. And when he was all done, and now he's old man Solomon writing this book to his son, hoping that maybe his son can glean some information off of the terrible things that he's done in his life, Solomon came to the conclusion that it never worked. He saw it all as vanity and chasing his wind. His life never got comfortable enough for him. Never was he ever comfortable living in his own skin because, again, he was too obsessed with time and how to make the here and now comfortable, and he forgot about the big picture. So at the end of his life, when he's trying to teach his son, son, don't do what I do. Don't do all the dumb things that I did. Let me just cut to the chase and I'll boil it down to you. Here is how you live eternally out in front of you. Fear God and keep his commands. Son, forget all the doctrine. Don't worry about, are you sacrificing the right way? Don't worry about whether or not somebody's happy with the way you're doing. Here is the secret to life. Fear God, keep your eyes on Him and His commands. Just do the things that you know He asked you to do. That's it. And think about how simple that would make my life if I would just do that. But I don't, do I? I get on that beach of life running back and forth, trying to do things my way. Hoping above hopes that I don't run out of speed or time before I actually get it right. That's hard, isn't it? Eternal perspective. But if you think that one's hard, let's talk about the step two. To live in God's time, we must seek His plan. Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11, you probably know this one by heart. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Hopefully you know that because we spent 8 weeks last year, remember, with old Samuel, with old Jeremiah, and walking through his life, and as he tried to call God's people back into a relationship with Him. We had all the object lessons up here, and this is about the time the pandemic struck, and so all of that happened last year. And this is kind of like one of those bumper sticker verses. You might even have this on a magnet on your refrigerator or some little plaque that you hang up in your wall, and you're then trying to give yourself an encouragement that God has a plan for your life. But we're so busy trying to convince ourselves that there is a plan, we miss the very truth of this verse. God knows the plan that He has for you. Now, in Jeremiah, he used the words plans. That's not that there's multiple tracks. That just means that one plan leads to another. This is an ongoing plan that goes all the way through your life. So maybe He has a plan for you at this space. When you get to that, He's going to have the rest of the plan. But God knows the plan. Remember, timeless God sees big picture puzzle, not little bitty pieces. He knows where He wants you to get to in your life. Wouldn't you like to have that information up front? Yeah, I want you in Stanton, Virginia, somewhere around 2020, Barry. If He'd have told me that when I was 13 years old, I'm like, you've lost your mind, God. I don't get up in front of people and talk. Believe it or not, this is not me. I don't do that. I didn't do this as a teenager. I was a more behind the scenes, cause trouble where nobody would catch me kind of guy. Okay, this was not me. But God has a plan for you, and you get filled in on a need-to-know basis. I hate this. This is obnoxious. At least God give me 3 or 4 steps down the road. No, I want you to take one step, and when you fix that part, then I'll give, it's like the dumb GPS, you know. We're riding down the road, and it's got the map, and a few miles before you're going to turn, it's like, there is a right-hand turn coming up. Please turn right, and then you take a quick glance. That's what we do. But the GPS knows where it's going. It's just trusting that I trust it enough that it knows where it's going. You see, usually He gives it to you one step at a time, one instruction at a time. Do this, and after you do that, then I'll give you the next one when you're ready for it. That's how this works. That's how God's plan works for you. So if you're ever waiting for how God's going to tell you, how does it end, God? God's going to say, tell you what, you stick with me through the whole book, and I'll tell you how it ends when we get to the last page. Really? Yeah. That's how the plan works. But I do take heart in these facts. His plan is to prosper me. His plan is not to harm me. That's good to know. You know, unlike my GPS that tried to drive me off the side of a mountain one time, God's not going to do that. His plan is to give me hope, and His plan is to give me a future. That's what you need to know. That's the plan. I'll fill in the details as we go. But here's the amazing thing. The plan only works if I stick to it. If I go off script, God will gladly let me drive off the road and try to do it my way. He's like, fine, go ahead. Just like the GPS, they'll tell me, please turn around when you have a chance, right? Isn't that how it goes? Yeah, you're laughing because you've all heard that before. Or you get the little thing where the little screen is flashing, recalculating, because it means you missed your turn, okay? God will let you live your life that way in a constant recalculating, please turn around mode. You can do that. God's plan only works if you want to follow it. You know the lesson we've already learned. If you actually take time to take a still view of who Jesus is, if you actually learn to live in the moment that God has given you right now, if you actually get to the point where you get to the dark times of life and you actually let Him lead you through them instead of running ahead of Him, that's the only way the plan works. And I'm amazed at how oftentimes we try to live our plan the way that we wanted to go. We've taken the route we want. And then when we get stuck in the mud, we look at God and say, "Why'd you do that, God? I'm not supposed to be in the mud. You said your plan would prosper me." He's like, "I know, but my plan was for you to take the left 100 feet back. You're the one that decided you wanted to take the next left. That's not me. You have to make that choice yourself." So just remember this as you're going through your life. It only works if you actually follow the map. That's how it has to go. So the third thing that we have to do, and I think this one is even harder than the other two. It's one thing to kind of keep my eternal perspective. It's another thing to try to follow the steps that God's put out in front of me. This one is just downright irritating. Romans chapter 8, verse 28. "And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose." Now, the other one was a bumper sticker verse. This is the crisis verse. Okay? If you've ever had to go and do counseling with somebody that's lost a loved one, this is your verse that we love to read. "Well, just so you know, all things work together for God's good for those who love Him." Just so you know, this is a lousy verse to read, because right now they can see no good whatsoever. Okay? To look at somebody that has just lost a loved one and say, "But God's going to do good things out of this," you've missed the point. Yes, maybe it gives a little bit of comfort, but this verse was supposed to have such a much bigger meaning. You see, we use it to comfort something that goes bad. Maybe not totally a bad thing. And when we read this verse, we like to focus on good for those who love Him. So that means as long as I love Him, then everything's going to work out good for me. Haven't you heard this preached before? Of course, then we have to get into what does it mean to love Him and what does it mean to have good for me? Because if you asked my kids when they were little, they would have swore to you that 20 bags of Tootsie Pops were good for them. No. Okay? If you ask me, I personally think that all the bread and honey I want to eat is good for me. No, it's not. So that those terms get a little weird. But we need to remember our good is wrapped around something much bigger: His purpose for our life. So God's good, the entire point of God's good, is to steer you down the path for His purpose. Now, that sounds really good, and that sounds like something that, yeah, God, thank you. Thank you. Until you realize that means that we may not see in any way imaginable how it can be good for me now. Trust me, when you're sitting in the hospital in a chair looking at a bed with a loved one in it, you don't see it. When you pick up the phone and it's the doctor and they say the word cancer, you don't see it. Okay? As we came out of 2020 and we had ropes, and we still have ropes in our sanctuary, and we were forced to socially distance and wear masks, let's face it, we don't see it. How on earth can anything good come out of this, God? But again, remember, me wrapped in this wrapper of time, God, no wrapper. He's timeless. So that means I can't always experience, this is not microwave ministry. I don't get to stick my want in there and punch a few buttons, and in a few moments it pops back out and my meal is ready. This is the long-term cooking. It might take a few ingredients, and it might take a little time to do this. But you have to just kind of trust God with the bigger picture. Because remember, you, little bitty wrapper, God, no wrapper. God's looking all the way down the road. He can see more than you. He's got a better view. You see, in the realm of eternity, what happens will always be best for you if you are, notice the points, you've got eternity in mind, not just the here and now, if you are following God's plan and you're putting forth God's purpose. At the end of the day, the things that happen may not be pleasant. Okay? I can give you lots of things in your life that just will not be pleasant. Tomorrow morning, the clock's going to go off again, and instead of coming to the building here, most of us are going to probably, well, you go to work, or maybe you'll telecommute. I don't know how you're going to work these days. But most of us are going to have things to do, and a lot of those things aren't pleasant. But God says, you know what? If you just take a moment and not get so obsessed with just running through your life at some rapid speed, it'll be for the best. You ever had that lecture with your kids? Yeah, I know. You don't like what I'm doing now, but it's for your own good. How many times do they believe you? Let me tell you what my batting average is. Okay? That's my batting average. My kids will attest to you. A lot of times they don't believe it's for their own good. Okay? They will probably still do it because there are other consequences if you don't. But convincing someone to do something and convincing something to do it because it's for their own good, two totally different things. I'm not here to convince you to do anything. But I do want you to understand, if you consider God and his timelessness, an eternal perspective, the fact that we need to live in his moment, the fact that he's got the big picture in mind, it'll be for the best. So here's what you have to do. I'm not asking you to stop, but I'm asking you to think about, how on earth could I slow my life down? That might mean that you got to jettison some baggage that you've got, things that you're trying to do to keep pace. Slow it down. You realize you have a finite amount of time, so what you might have to do is take the things that you want to do and fit them into the time bucket you have. Instead of running faster, just do the things that you can fit into what you've got. But there's so much I want to... Slow down. Be still. Know that he's God. Make sure the life that you're running, the race that you're after, make sure it is considering, where does God want me to end up? Do I have his eternal perspective? Do I have his plan? And most importantly, am I living life for his purpose? If you're here this morning and you know what, you've never met this God,